Welcome into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here, and we were out at the Pro Bowl last week, so it's been a couple weeks since we had one of our more traditional style shows, so there is plenty for us to get to. We're going to be talking about Pro Bowl, some changes in the coaching staff, some mock drafts maybe, and maybe even a little bit about that Alex Smith trade. So there's a lot of different things that we're going to get to, which means we're sure you probably have a lot of questions to send us. Use that hashtag BucksLive. That's how I'll be able to search for those and find those in our final segment here. So let's start out with the coaching changes. That was kind of the big news of the week. So what do you feel like those mean? And it's not any new people to the staff. Right. It's just a little bit of a reshuffling. What do you think is the motivation behind that? And then what we'll see is the actual effects of
it. Yeah, just to summarize, in case anybody hasn't heard, Todd Monken, who has been our offensive coordinator / wide receivers coach, is now just going to be the offensive coordinator. And Skylar Fulton, who was an offensive assistant, is now going to be the receivers coach. So basically you have some reassigning of responsibilities there. You know, what do I think that means? Basically, what you've done is you've taken Todd Monken and you've put him in a much more traditional offensive coordinator type of role in terms of what he does during the week at practice and in meetings with other coaches. So you've taken away the need for him to spend all the time he would normally spend coaching the receivers, specifically in their meeting room, planning practice for the receivers, and you allow him basically to focus all his time on helping Dirk Cutter come up with the weekly game plans and massage the playbook and so on. And on the coaching on the field, being much more free to watch everything on the field than rather just being coaching receivers. So this will allow him to really focus on all of that. Skylar Fulton, we don't know as much about him simply because he's a much younger guy, doesn't have the same long track record. So he had already been working with receivers, so that's a plus. He seems like a very energetic guy, spends a lot of time after practice with the receivers, and I think he's got a really nice rapport with that room already. So, you know, again, he doesn't have the same track record, so he's less of a known commodity than Todd Monken, but obviously the Bucs have seen a lot in him in the last year, and when they had him in the coaching fellowship in 2016, that they like what they've seen and they want to give him that responsibility.
And how do you see this affecting Coach Cutter, that if Todd Monken is freed up to focus, like you talked about, on those other things as well, how does that help Coach Cutter when he's already doing a lot of the play calling and what that offensive coordinator role could be for him?
Yeah, and so, you know, there are offensive coordinators in the league who call plays. Obviously, Dirk Cutter as a head coach, and he's not the only one, has been the one calling plays for the Bucs. But the team still employed an offensive coordinator because that guy helps you develop your offense all throughout the week, helps you run practices, helps you identify packages of plays, put together packages for every game. What's going to work in the red zone? You know, what's going to work in the two-minute drill? I'm sure that Dirk and Todd meet about those kinds of things a lot, and now they'll have more. Todd will have more time to do so, and more of just his complete focus on that. So I think that's a good thing. And as for coaching receivers, you know, Skylar's got a pretty, I think, fairly simple group to work with, easy group to work with. I mean, you got a Pro Bowler in there. You got DeSean Jackson, who's been in the league like 11 years. Chris Godwin seems to be mature well beyond his years. Adam Humphries obviously knows exactly what he's doing. He's a pro. I don't know if I left anybody out there, but you know, that's a pretty easy group.
Yeah,
I don't
true.
Mean easy. It's not an easy job, but
you're not really working to develop some brand new unknown commodity that doesn't know the Bucs system or anything. And he's already, he's kind of getting a pretty talented group handed to him. So if you're going to start out as a position coach, it's a pretty good group to get as your first thing. It's like when Ben Steele was promoted to tight ends and you're like, oh, here's
by the
OJ
way, first
Howard
round pick.
And everything.
Here's
here
for
you go. This will make everything easier. Okay, great. So moving on from that, Pro Bowl was this last Sunday and Kwan's first time, Gerald, just rinse and repeat Gerald every year, which we love and is so great for him. So looking at the two of them and what they were able to do, what did you think of their performance?
Yeah,
in the game?
Kwan had told me earlier in the week that he intended to play the game with his usual intensity.
Which means a lot.
Yeah, and apparently, you know, he's kind of all over the field. Gerald McCoy had told me that, because I asked him, you know, last time, you've been in, this is your sixth one in a row. He said, you've been in games where it hasn't been real intense, and you've been in games like last year. Last year's game, the Lions actually played, and they played hard, and Gerald McCoy had one of the NFC's five sacks. And I'm like, is that the beginning of a trend? Are we going to see more of that? He's like, you really don't know. You have to see how the week goes, see who gets fired up. Because if one side gets fired up, then the other side is going to get fired up. He said last year he couldn't remember which guy, but it was probably Ray Lewis, who was one of the Legends captains for the AFC, gave like a ridiculously good pregame speech for a Pro Bowl. And so the AFC came out and was playing really hard. And Gerald's like, okay, they're playing really hard.
Well, we
got to play really hard now, too. And that's what ended up happening. This year, I think it went back a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Like the running backs were basically like, Oh, you tackled me, right?
Oh, I'm just, Wait, it almost sounds like the battles in history where they have the debate of who fired first. That's almost what it sounds like on the lines of, like, if someone fires first, then it starts, and otherwise we just kind of...
And nobody fired this
time,
Nobody fired this time,
so we just kind of like, okay.
Yeah, you know, you kind of... The passing game is still fun in the Pro Bowl. You know, you got a lot of deep passes, and you get pick sixes and so on, and there was one of those in that game, right? Wasn't there a pick six?
Right.
Harrison, maybe? Mm-hmm. Harrison Smith. So the passing game is still fun to watch. It's almost like you maybe should play 7-on-7 flag football.
Right.
But then how do you still recognize the all-stars running back and
offensive line
and defensive line? So I don't think there's really going to be any big change of the game. It's just going to be year to year whether it ends up being sort of an intense one like last year or one more like this one.
And either way, they are still entertaining. Just depends on in what way.
Sure.
But, yeah, and I was happy for Quan that I think a lot of times first-time Pro Bowlers, the big thing is just proving that you deserve to be there and that you are among these caliber of players. And when he's leading the team in tackles, I think that pretty much solidifies, he was meant to be there. And I think that's always exciting when not only do you get to go, but you prove you absolutely deserve a spot there. So that's probably everything that Quan could have hoped it would have been.
And he'll have that name recognition now as a Pro Bowler. So when they're voting next year, he'll have that sort of, you know, they have that kind of...
the incumbent type idea.
They have that... momentum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true. I like that. Okay.
That's probably enough about the Pro Bowl, though.
I know. Yeah, that's about all that
right.
The
so what did we spend on
is...
that? 90 seconds? I think that was enough.
That's about enough. That's pretty funny. So I know you have an article out about mock drafts, and this is always the time of year we start to really fully kick into draft gear, which it's crazy to still realize it is still very far away. So we are going to be talking about these over and over and over, but it just never gets old to predict and hope and dream and think about who the different guys are. So 7 is an interesting position. It's in between some of the areas that the team has been in recent years where it feels like there's almost too many combinations a little bit later to really know too much versus complete certainty when you have the number one overall pick. 7's a nice little middle ground where you don't have as many combinations.
Hey, if we can just do as well as we did with our last 7th overall pick, which was Mike Evans, I'll
be
happy.
That worked pretty well, I would say.
Yeah. Like you said, it's a very long time till the draft. What are we talking, February? So, well, it's like 3 more months.
Yep.
But we are in full on draft analysis mode. I did, like you said, a story about drafts, sort of the trend of what draft analysts are expecting from the Buccaneers. And I had no trouble finding 20 mock drafts of just recognizable things. There's, you know, your CBS Sports and your NFL.coms. I only use those, but there's countless other ones of just a site like Draft Tech or Draft Online or Draft mockdraft.com. You know, there's a million of them out there. But the obvious trend is that the Buccaneers will be looking for somebody on one of the lines. That's the big trend, yes. Now, you know, when you're doing a mock draft right now, even the ones that are really plugged in, even your NFL.com guys or your Mel Kuypers, they don't have too much information that they've gotten from somewhere or another about teams. Right now, when you're doing a mock draft, what you're doing is you're matching up a team and what you perceive its needs to be to a player. So it's no surprise that most of the mock drafters think we're going to take a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman because we were last in the league in sacks and we did not run the ball very well. The pass protection was actually pretty good until the end when three starters got hurt and then it gave up some more sacks and kind of slipped to the middle of the pack. But we were top 10 before that. But the running game was not good, and it's pretty easy to see that this offense, while some of the numbers, top 10 in a lot of things like yards and passing yards and first downs and third down and so on, but not really turning that into as many points as you'd like. And how do you get over that hump? How do you take this offense from being, okay, it's got a lot of parts and it's obviously pretty good, to this is one of the best offenses in the league producing tons of points. And I think it's pretty obvious that if you can get your running game going like it was in 2015, add that to what we got in the passing game, it's going to be pretty darn good. So I can understand why everybody is expecting us to take something in lines that I certainly wouldn't argue with either one of them. I think either one of them would be good. The problem for the Buccaneers, and I think we're going to have to pick this up again in the second segment, is where's the depth at those two positions? And you brought up a good point about where the Buccaneers are at number 7. Could it fall in between some opportunities? And so let's pick that up again in the next segment. But I can understand why a lot of people have us picking offensive line, even though it would seem like defensive line is a bigger
need. Okay, well, we'll dive more into that in the next segment. And then the segment after that is when we're going to get to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We'll take a quick break and get right back into those mock drafts.
I don't know nobody's going to let another man walk in their house and take something from them. So take that to heart. This is personal to me.
We call this the jungle. This our house today, man. Let's be great, man. Let's go. Let's get it in, man.
Be legendary today. Don't forget, this is our house. This is our house.
Now takes the snap, looks to his right, look, crossing route, throw, caught ball, touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hit the back, drop. It's a Lavonte David quarterback sack, his second of the game.
Let's make it count, we're past the 50, okay?
Big Winston looking. James gonna run to the left of the 10. He throws to the shot, touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Attack, technique, and takeaways. Got it?
It's picked off. Intercepted the 30. To the 25 to the 20. Quan Alexander will take it to the house. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Welcome back into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite, Casey Phillips, and Scott Smith. After this, we're going to have another segment where we get to your Twitter questions. You can continue to send those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. So we were talking a little bit about those mock drafts and how everybody seems to be predicting either an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. But seven is an interesting spot because especially with D-line and defensive ends, a lot, if they are really a dominant pass rusher, which is why you want to take them in the first round, they tend to go top five a pretty safe estimate. And so seven is unfortunate because it's
you need depth there.
Outside of that.
A really good pass rusher is probably number two on the list behind quarterback and what teams would love to get in the top one to five picks. You know, if you have
even
a year.
Even more than an offensive tackle?
More than an offensive tackle. If you look at draft years when the quarterbacks don't go first overall, you do see some tackles every now and then, but you see pass rushers a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the hardest things to get, and it's one of the most coveted things. I would point you to the 2016 draft when, because of pre-draft trades, going into it, everybody knew that Jared Goff and Carson Wentz were going to go 1-2. So all the speculation began at pick number 3, which was San Diego. And I remember the predictions were all over the board on what they would do. You know, you had Ezekiel Elliott there. Jalen Ramsey was there. I saw them being predicted with 3 or 4 different players. But when it came down to it, who was the one they took? Essentially, who was the best non-quarterback prospect in their mind? Joey Bosa. In their mind, the top pass rusher. He was the first one off the board, and it's proven to be a fantastic pick.
Yep.
This year looks very much the same to me, which is why I firmly believe if Bradley Chubb, mm-hmm. Is North Carolina State pass rusher, is still in April considered the top pass rusher as he is now, and that probably be the case. I mean, what's he going to do unless he gets hurt or just completely bombs at his pro day, which is probably not going to happen, right? So assuming he's still considered easily the number one pass rusher, I would bet money on him going third overall. So I saw of the 20 mock drafts I looked at today, 5 of them did have Chubb getting to us. But the others all had Chubb going before that. And by far the most common spot they put him at was number 3. So there wasn't anybody that had Chubb on the board when we got to 7 that didn't give us Chubb.
Right.
And that seems like a very, that makes a lot of logical sense to me.
Right. And we were talking about when your article you put up of the mock drafts that he is the only defensive lineman mocked to us. That in those top 20 that you were listing of that.
There was one other? Yeah, Marcus Davenport.
Okay.
Texas San Antonio. And because, you know, that's a smaller program. Mm-hmm. The program's only been around for about 10 years. It is FBS. It is the upper level, right. But it's, you know, they don't always play. They play a game or two a year against your Auburns or Texas A&Ms or whatever, but they don't play the same level of competition. So you're always going to have that wonder when you're talking about a prospect from there. But he has already, since the first mock drafts at the beginning of this month to the ones you're seeing now, this is Davenport I'm talking about, has already gotten a lot of momentum upward. So there were two picks. There were two drafts that gave us Marcus Davenport at number 7. That's a lot tougher thing to predict than Bradley Chubb, because we can all make the assumption that probably our guys upstairs feel the same way about Bradley Chubb as everybody else does. I would guess. We don't know that. Right. We don't know that. I'm not speaking for them.
Right.
Maybe they don't like him. But it's a lot harder for us to guess what our guys upstairs think about Marcus Davenport. And, of course, they're not going to tell us.
And that could be the need versus best player available discussion of, if Chubb is gone, you get to us at 7. Are we just saying we need a defensive end? Or,
yeah.
Because there,
and you can get in trouble doing that.
Some people might argue that Davenport wouldn't be as good of a player overall as maybe someone else at another position.
Like Quentin Nelson.
And so that's where you get into that debate of need versus best player
available.
Yes,
and I think teams can get themselves in trouble. I don't think that our guys have. I think they've done a good job. But a team can get itself in trouble by reaching too much for a need. So you're maybe Chubb's still there at 5 and you're hoping, and then he gets taken. You don't necessarily just immediately go to the next guy on your defensive end chart. And they're smart, obviously. They know that.
Right.
I'm not telling them anything they don't know. But, you know, the thing about the offensive line, and we've said it before here, is it's a little conceptually, I like the idea of taking an offensive lineman. We haven't taken a first-round offensive lineman since Davin Joseph in 2006, and at some point I think you're going to have to. But when we talk about getting better on the offensive line, we always kind of struggle on, well, where exactly do we need to do stuff? Mm-hmm. So, but if you just take a guy, let's take Quentin Nelson. If you read about him, most of the draft analysts say this guy is like one of the best can't-miss prospects. Mm. You know, like he's not going to be a bust. He's going to be a really good player for whoever he goes to. You know, that's only so far as true as it becomes true. I mean,
right,
there have been can't-miss prospects.
Until he becomes a bust and you're like,
missed.
Oh, well.
But if we can sort of assume that he's one of the safer picks, I'm all right with it. At some point, if it's either right away or some point down the line, he's going to help you quite a bit. So what I think, and we were talking about a little bit before, was what's going to happen in the first 6 picks, and what the Buccaneers need is for there to be that quarterback frenzy.
Right, which is always very helpful when that happens. So something that we were talking a little bit about, and I saw, I think, a Twitter question about this, so we'll do it in parts because the Twitter question had a few different parts, but people have been wondering if the Alex Smith trade would impact anything about the draft for the Bucs at 7, of all of a sudden a different team may or may not need a quarterback, and then who would potentially be drafting ahead of us, and would they all of a sudden pick a quarterback, or would they take Alex Smith, but now he's gone, and then Kirk Cousins and all of that. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know if – off the top of my head, I don't see how it would change the Buccaneers' draft – situation that much, because it was pretty much assumed that Alex Smith was moving on from Kansas City in some way or another, and that they're going to go with Pat Mahomes. And Alex Smith was going to get a job starting for somebody. So that's what he's doing. He's starting for the Redskins. And, of course, his trade isn't, I guess, official yet, but we're just assuming that's going to happen. Kirk Cousins, therefore, will be leaving Washington, and he will be starting for somebody. Somebody's going to start signing Kirk Cousins to be their starting quarterback. So those two guys were going to be starting somewhere anyway, and basically Alex Smith takes Kirk Cousins' spot, and so that makes Kirk Cousins the free one instead of Kirk Cousins staying in Washington, and Alex Smith can be considered by what you might think is quarterback-needy teams like Arizona, Denver, Buffalo, the New York Jets, Cleveland. So now he's in play for all of those teams. If I suppose it's possible, depending on salary demands and fit, you know, the type of quarterbacks those two guys are, that maybe just randomly pick a team. Maybe Cleveland would have loved to have Alex Smith, but wouldn't be interested in Kirk Cousins. But he's going to be somewhere. So I'm not sure it changes too much how many teams above the Buccaneers will be looking at quarterbacks.
Because either way, the same number of quarterbacks was going to be available, whether it was Alex Smith or Kirk Cousins.
What we need, what the Buccaneers need, is for these teams to fall in love with guys. I mean, we kind of assume that Sam Darnold and Josh
Allen.
No,
that's not right. That's our O-lineman.
No, there's just Josh Allen.
Right.
He was going to put him in the other group, but I think we'll pick it up in the next segment.
Okay, well, we're going to get back to those Twitter questions in the second segment and finish up discussion of all the different quarterbacks in play and how that could affect when the Bucs pick. So keep sending those questions in. Use that hashtag BucsLive, and we'll be right back.
Hey, Tampa Bay, go. Bucks know how to shine.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine.
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Go Bucks!
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Stand up!
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Go Bucks!
Because we know we're on the top.
We stand up!
Welcome back to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. Time for our final segment, which is getting to your Twitter questions. You can continue to send them in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. For now, we'll kind of let you finish your thought that we had to kind of cut off there for our break about it's not so much about which other quarterbacks that are already in the league are available as how much these teams drafting above the Bucks fall in love with the potential quarterbacks they might draft, and you were starting to talk about who you thought that might be.
I mean, if you look at all the mock drafts, and they'll change between now and then, the quarterbacks tend to rise, but the guys that seem like everybody's assuming are going to, are definitely going to go high are Sam Darnold and Sam Rosen.
Also, we talked about this before the break.
Are they both named Sam? They're not both named Sam. Is it Josh?
Josh, that's what I was thinking. Josh, and then we
and then Josh Allen from Wyoming and Baker Mayfield, the Heisman Trophy winner from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And then I guess I've seen him in mock drafts, but not in the top 10, Lamar Jackson. So the teams ahead of the Buccaneers, you got Cleveland picking 1 and 4. They probably will pick a quarterback with one of those picks, probably the first one. You got the Giants at 2. Do they start preparing for Eli Manning's eventual departure? I'd say there's a pretty decent bet. Indy's at 3, and they're a little bit of a wild card because they certainly are set at quarterback if Andrew Luck's okay, but if he's not, then they are definitely not set. But let's just assume that Andrew Luck's going to come back and be fine. Right. So Cleveland getting a 4. Jets are 6, I believe. Mm-hmm. Denver's 5, mm-hmm. quarterback needy. Jets are 6, quarterback needy.
Right.
And if you look at Indy at 3, especially if they think potentially 4 of the top 5 teams are going to pick quarterbacks, they could be very much a team that would trade down.
That's an interesting point.
So if you can get if those quarterback stock for all those guys can rise, and the ones that are a little tougher to predict are Josh Allen in particular, because mm-hmm. he played at Wyoming in smaller school. Maybe some teams will fall in love with the idea that he's the next Carson Wentz.
I was about to say Carson Wentz probably helped his draft stock just a little bit there.
That would be nice,
yeah. So that would be handy.
That's what the Bucs have to hope for. I mean, we're all making the, I think, fairly safe assumption that the Buccaneers are not going to be taking a quarterback with the first
pick. Yeah, I think that is a safe bet for sure. All right, let's get into some of these Twitter questions. Again, you can continue to send them in. Use that hashtag BucsLive. Miss Dotson said, loved seeing Kwon in the Pro Bowl, making splash plays as usual, and she said, hashtag first of many. And then she said, Scott, you always say cornerback or DN when talking draft.
So true.
She said, so you play the GM and pick one. Which one would you want?
First of all, she pegged me exactly right there. I always say cornerback in the draft, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a first-round pick, because I just think it's a never-ending struggle to find good depth there.
Right.
We took a cornerback in the first round just 2 drafts ago, and yet do you feel good heading into next year with our cornerback depth
chart.
Again,
you always need more.
Especially if Brent Grimes doesn't come back. So, if I'm picking, the question is at number seven, which do I take? Because there's guys, the problem there is the top-rated DBs, are they safeties? Are they corners? Minka Fitzpatrick and, boy, I'm having trouble with names today.
Sorry, you were on vacation. You know,
that's
the
true. I'm not back into it yet. But there's two guys that are highly rated, but they're probably safeties. Derwin James of Florida State. Great, great, great players. Can they be Jalen Ramsey? If you decide they're Jalen Ramsey,
right,
then you feel good about it. You feel great about picking that at pick seven. And then with the defensive ends, as we were talking, is Bradley Chubb the only one worthy of a top 10? Mm. So there's a lot still to be determined there. If it's just you're asking me conceptually, pick number seven, the team we have now, 100% I go defensive end, 100%.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, One Buck for Life said, can you see the team doubling up on D-line and or corner in the draft and taking multiple draft picks for either of those positions? And then they also asked in perhaps keeping Vernon in the slot. So I think their main question is, could if they drafted two cornerbacks, mm-hmm. maybe have them be the outsides and
yeah.
Vernon be the slot.
I definitely can see it. The team I would point you to that has done that a lot and had pretty good results from it is Carolina. The year they took Star Lutalele and Kawan Short, it was actually Lutalele who went first, and then they took Kawan Short in the second round, and Short's actually proven to be somewhat better of a player, but they're both starters for them on an excellent defensive line. And then 2 years ago, they took three cornerbacks, like third, fourth, and fifth round, or third, fourth, and sixth round picks, and two of them are starting for them, or one starting, one's in the slot, the other one didn't make it, but they got a pretty good one out of it in James Bradbury. Now, I don't think you'd see the Buccaneers doubling up in rounds one and two, a pass rusher in one and a pass rusher in two, unless somebody they love after they've already taken one falls to them, or a cornerback, because I just think there's a little bit too many needs there. You know, defensive end, cornerback, perhaps offensive line, perhaps running back. And I think you probably want to get two different positions with your first two picks. But then you start getting the third, fourth, fifth round. Yeah, I could see you doubling up. And
okay.
It's not uncommon at all. It's and also, when I started reading that question, I actually thought you were going to ask me doubling up free agency and then the draft.
That's funny, because I was just going to go ahead and ask you that follow-up, because I know we like talking about that idea of maybe draft. I think that would probably be everyone's, or maybe at least your dream scenario, is drafting a D end and a corner, whichever
yeah.
order, whichever place, and then also getting both of
yeah.
those in free agency.
Especially defensive end. And the reason I like that approach, and the Bucks have done it a few times in recent years, is you're not guaranteed of getting either one of them. So you're not guaranteed you're going to be able to find a free agent. But if you do, it comes before the draft. So, okay, no matter what happens in the draft, we've already helped out the position. Now,
right.
we can still help it out more if it works out the way we're not quite as tied to it. And it did work out that way for the Buccaneers in 2016 when they signed Brent Grimes and then drafted Vernon Hargraves. It could or could not work out. But if you get a good defensive end in free agency and you don't like the way it's falling in the first round, maybe you do offensive line and then go back to it in the second round or whatever. But if you could get a proven guy in free agency, a prospect you like in the draft, and then Noah Spence comes back, maybe Robert Ayers has a healthier year, all of a sudden now that you're really thin, you're starting to look like you got depth.
Okay. And we'll close with this one here. Not too much time, but we'll try. Joe is asking what I was talking about earlier about how a lot of people were wondering how this Alex Smith trade might affect the Bucs besides just the draft area in terms of A, playing the Redskins next year, and B, the fact that when Jameis's contract comes up, that people are talking about that Kirk Cousins might get this huge deal, and that stuff tends to kind of be a domino effect. How do you see those areas
yeah.
being affected by
well,
this?
Alex Smith already got a huge extension, if the reports are to be believed, so that has already begun. Maybe the whole reason that Kirk Cousins is going to be moving on is because his request was higher than Washington was willing to pay, and he's not going to be able to find another team that he's not coming for that's going to pay that. And that was driven by the fact that the money he was getting as a tagged player was already up there in like the $30 million range. So you can understand a guy's going to look for that much or more.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, what he gets could affect it. But that was always going to be the case. There was always somebody that was going to be signed at your position. The contracts are always going to go up. The salary cap's going up. So whether it was these two guys or somebody else, it was going to affect Jameis when they eventually get around to signing him.
Okay.
So it will affect it, but it's not anything that was unexpected.
Yep, that's a great point. All right, that's going to do it for us here on Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.